Welcome to part two of The Switch, a story involving mental confusion, a mental condition, or at least some thought that's what it was. This story dives into a place where what is unknown to us becomes more clear. What is the line between what we know and true reality? Are there times when that line is not there at all? Taking this job, we were about to find out. If you have not yet heard part one of this story, check that out first so that you know what's going on. They call me the Ghost. I'm ex-CIA and now a dark operative on the dark web. Today is the story of hope and fear. Take a listen and enjoy. We talk a lot on our ride back to Sean's house after visiting the castle, and we're confident that there is a spirit in that castle. We only got the one read, so we can assume there's just one. Is it the spirit of the wife and mother who live there? And let's just say that it is. What does that have to do with Margie? Back at Sean's, we find Sean. He's up and waiting for us. Apparently, two glasses of a strong Merlot while we were gone and the couch knocked him out pretty good for a couple of hours, and it seemed to have done him some good. He was awake and full of ideas. Harley and Ryder get set up, and I listen. He's going a million miles an hour, talking and apologizing for us having to get involved at all. His theory is that this request was somehow done by Margie and that she needs serious medical help, and that is what needs to be fixed here. It's not hard to see that his focus is Margie, and why wouldn't it be? It's not like this man deals with the extraordinary on any type of regular basis or at all. His focus is personal, and this is how a lot of our clients are. But in this particular case, this man doesn't know, he can't imagine, he's seemingly unaware that anything really out of the ordinary is going on here. While he's completely unaware, we are completely aware that there is definitely something going on. I need to be gentle with him here because he could flip on us. He could get angry, kick us out even, in the simple defense of his wife. You know, this is his family that he's worried about. Sean goes on about his ideas, about what he can do for Margie, how he wants to try to get her home, and then maybe we can help him and get her better and back to being focused. He thinks her being in the facility is what's making her worse. And right there, that's my in. I look over to Harley and Ryder nods at me. They have something. I need to get on Sean's side before we can present anything to him. So this is my end. I tell him that I agree with him, that the facility is not actually helping Margie. Sean's looking back at me, but I can see he's still in a hyper state. He's scared. But hearing me agree with him at all about the facility seems to start to calm him down a little bit. He's not angry or anything, but we definitely came back to a worked up guy. I ask Sean if he thought he could be open. Open to ideas and thoughts and, you know, then some. And then I lean into him and I tell him that with all due respect for Margie and himself, we think we found something at that castle that might be able to help Margie. Not that I know exactly what that is yet. And that sparks his interest. He accompanies me over to where Ryder and Harley are. We explain to him what happened at the castle. And I won't waste time re-explaining it for you guys here. Not thinking or realizing that the spirit we came across could have had anything to do with his wife. All he says is that we're like those ghost hunters, and he's kind of smiling, and we're just looking at him. And we just wait for a few seconds. And then it starts to hit him. He looks at all of us, and in a more surprised and confused voice says something like, you know, wait, what did you say? Why are you telling me this? And does this have something to do with Margie? And how could that be? We're all sitting around what Harley and Ryder have set up. And they flip the sound from their earpieces to the speaker so that we can all hear. And Harley asks Sean if he's ready, and he is. And then Ryder plays what we caught on audio. The voice is really faint at first, and it's hard to hear, but Ryder makes a couple of adjustments. Her equipment's really good. And she gets the sound to a good enough quality that we can hear something. It's a woman's voice. The woman from the whimpering that we heard both at the warehouse and at the castle. What we heard just with our ears. There's more than whimpering on that audio, though. Barely able to make it out, but you could. The woman's voice says, "You came for me. You heard me. Get me out." Well, we know that this is the same voice as the one we heard in the request. How we got that request, we still don't know, but it's the same voice, so that's something. And Ryder and I are, and Harley are confirming that with each other, and we're also commenting that the voice on the audio sort of sounded like Margie. mean, they're speaking in an entirely different way, and maybe we just have Margie on the mind. And we're just making those kinds of comments when we notice Sean. He's white as a ghost. He's sitting there, frozen in position. He's sitting up very straight. His hands are on his thighs out in front of him. And Harley says his name to snap him out of it. And he looks at her, and then he stands straight up and he says, "That's Margie's voice." And he wants us again to tell him where we got that recording. I mean, the guy's in total disbelief here. We tell him all of it again, and he kind of starts to panic. He gets up again. He's asking no one and everyone, you know, how is this? And it can't be, but it is her voice. I ask him if he's sure. I mean, we think it's familiar, but he would know better. We'd have to run a voice match to actually be sure, but he is sure. He knows his wife. I mean, we've only seen her once and not for long. And the way she was spouting off, and then even when she was clinging to her husband in a panic, she wasn't using her voice in the same way as what we recorded. But Sean is 100% sure, and now he's just scared. And I have to say here, this is a real thing. Unknown and unexplainable things don't register with everyone. I mean, Sean's the kind of guy that would never take those urban legends and ghost stories about the castle seriously. He even said so. And now, if there's some connection to some spirit, an old building 2 hours away, to his wife who is being held in a mental facility right where he is, well, that is just way too much for his head to handle. But I remind him that we are experts in the odd and that we are prepared to help. I also remind him that we're on the same page about that facility. And so together, we can stop the madness and get his wife out of that facility with the goal of getting her home and intact. I need him to stick with us. I need a commitment. And it's at that time that I start talking about this as a job. And I let him know that for us to help him work on this, we all need to be committed, you know, on both sides to a job overall here. The job would be to find out the connection of this spirit to Margie, free Margie of what ails her with all of this right now, and so that then if she does need any kind of help, she can get it in the right way. And lastly, to reach the ultimate goal of having this whole situation cleared from their lives so that they can go back to normalcy, whatever that looks like for them. Now, this situation, it happens in our world, right? The problem is, a lot of times, no one knows it's happening. You know, people talk about spirits and hauntings and things, but mostly people are watching it for entertainment. But for the people that it's happening to, it's very serious. To stop this craziness with Margie and Sean does not mean that we can stop it from happening everywhere else. We know there is a spirit here that seems to have put themselves into the lives of Margie and Sean. The intentions we do not know, but it is wrong, and we would like to help him to stop it. I make it clear I'm not going to charge him for this job. That would be completely inappropriate. This is one of those deeds that you do because you can. This is not the only spirit situation going on right now, and it won't be the last. All we can do is stop the wrongs one at a time. Having that conversation with Sean actually helped snap him out of his panicking, scared thoughts even more. He can remember now that, yes, this is what I do. This is why I have a team. People hire me and the team for great things, and I can help here. He thanks us for doing this willingly and says that, okay, he's ready to do anything that he needs to do to help move things along and resolve these issues. So we get all of that done and out of the way, and it's official. We are now working this as a job. It's coming on morning by the time we get all done talking. We work at night, if you haven't noticed, a lot of the time. We all need some rest, and so we do get some of that. And when we're up again in the early afternoon, we dig some more into the castle situation to see if we can make more sense of things. And what we find is very interesting. The castle couple, the man and his wife, have a daughter. They had a daughter, which we knew. Well, it turns out the daughter was mentally challenged as well as an adult, and she too ended up in a sanatorium. Can you believe that? It was just like her mother. With even more digging, we find something else interesting. The castle couple's daughter took over everything when her mother passed away. Her father was gone, and now her mother was as well. When her mother passed, the daughter pulled some strings and had her mother buried on the property in an unmarked grave, for only the daughter to know and the men who assisted her. It was a secret burial. It's not much, but it's a lot at the same time. For me, and for Harley and Ryder, it brings us back to that butterfly room at the castle. We now have two women who lived there and basically played out the same major things, the castle and then the sanatorium. Up to this point, We considered that this ghost, this spirit, could be the wife. Maybe she was still at the castle looking for her husband. Maybe she was angry, from the sounds of it, sad. But now, with the voice and the butterfly room, we now believe the spirit we are dealing with is that of the daughter. She too could be buried on that property. Maybe she worked something out with the people that helped her with her mother, you know, if she were to pass early. Even though we don't have proof that she is there or that it is her, we feel that it's the best possibility here and we agree to move forward as if it is her. Next up, visit Margie. Sean will come as well. We need to meet with Margie again and talk to her. Basically go there with an open mind that anything she says or does could be a clue here. And then after this meeting, I will know better how to organize the team and what we will need. Sean arranges for another visit to the facility. This time, we will bring with us something to record her voice, as well as something to get pictures of anything unusual. We will not be bringing anything anyone can see because we don't want to upset Margie or the doctors, but this must be done so that we can analyze better away from the facility what's going on with Margie. So I put on this necklace. It's actually a camera, a voice recorder. I have a small remote control that goes with it. I'll slip it into my jacket pocket. And this way, I can take pictures on the spot without anyone realizing it. I can also take video as well, which will simultaneously record sound. The necklace is pretty cool, actually. It's a pendant, silver snake with jeweled eyes, kind of like the one I have on the banner. Anyway, we all get set up and we head over to the facility. Before we even meet with Margie, we do something different this time. Sean presents Harley as a doctor working for him privately. Second opinions happen all the time, and he gets away with this. He also says Harley is there for observation. She has her PhD in psychology. She's able to present that to the doctor. And once again, with how kind Sean was to the facility the first time, there's really not much they can do. We get all that out of the way, and then we're taken to Margie. But not before Harley's given a lab coat. The on-site doctor felt this would help Margie maybe accept us a little bit better, seeing how last time, just at the sight of us, it made her so upset. So we find Margie. She's in a similar state to that of which we saw her last time. She's frazzled, she's acting erratic, and she's not very happy. She's particularly upset to have us there. Margie put in the request, however, so either this is a different personality coming out here, or it has something to do with that spirit at the castle. And we are betting on the latter. You know, in today's world, you guys, many would never consider the latter as an option. But putting someone away for what appears to be, in our very human world, one thing, not only may not address the true problem, it may never fix it. And we have seen that too many times. Okay, well, I start recording immediately. Video, audio, right off the bat. We can see that she is agitated by our presence. With Harley in her lab coat, she accompanies Sean over to where Margie is, and they address her directly. Ryder and I, we keep a small distance. Sean introduces Harley as a doctor and that she is there to help. And today, just talk. He gets Margie to agree, although she does ask him angrily, what's up with them, meaning Ryder and me. She seems to remember us, but nonetheless, Sean reminds her that we are friends of both Harley and himself, and that we need to be there too. She's confused. She seems a little bit confused, but she does agree reluctantly. Sean glances over to me, shaking his head, just like the last time. It's a confirmation that Margie is still off and not her normal self, which is pretty obvious all around. There were a lot of strategically placed questions for this meeting with Margie, and I won't repeat them all, but I'll give you the highlights. Sean tells Margie that he thinks that she'll be out soon and that some of her friends want to see her when she's home. And he brings up one couple that they know and says that they will be back from their Florida vacation in a week. And her reaction is that of, you know, well, good for them. But when he asks her if she would like to see them when she goes home, she comes back with a, sure, that'd be nice, I suppose. The problem here is that the couple never goes to Florida. In fact, they live in San Diego and they haven't lived in Pennsylvania for over 4 years at that point. He asks her if they're feeding her well in the facility. And she tells him it's okay. And then he jokes about how it can't be as good as her cooking, especially her favorite, fettuccine Alfredo. Well, she returns kind of a smile and agrees. It almost looks like it hurts to be friendly. But Margie doesn't like Alfredo. The cream sauce gives her an upset stomach, so she avoids it. And the whole time they're talking, Margie's fidgeting. She's tapping her fingers on the table and things like that. And then Harley moves in to ask a few questions of her own. She asks Margie about her headaches and if she realizes where she is. She asks her how her treatment has been and if she thinks it's helping. And Margie answers these questions, and most of them she answers in a calm way. A couple of times she just kept it simple and said, "I don't care about that." With every question Harley asked, though, it seemed Margie was more thoughtful. You know, she had to think about it. She would pause for a moment before giving a response. The last question Harley asks is, "How are you feeling overall? And are you okay?" And this somehow evokes an emotional reaction. Margie turns her head quickly to face Harley. She looks at her for a moment, and then she extends her neck to look over at me and Ryder. We just smile. Then she does that same knocking of her head that she did the last time. She starts twisting around in her chair and rolling her head for a few times before looking back at Sean. We see a tear start to make its way down her left cheek. She goes to talk, but nothing comes out. I mean, she's really struggling. She grips the arms of her chair and she's trying again. And her words come out, but they're like a forced whisper. And she says, "Sean, are you coming?" And she turns to Ryder and me and says, "Are you coming?" And she looks directly at Harley and says, "Please come. Please get me out." Sean moves over to her little couch where she is sitting and puts his arm around her. And Harley's across from them in a chair. And Ryder and I, we're just a bit off to the side and behind Harley. When Sean pulls her close, she puts her arms around him as well, and she squeezes, pushing her body into his. Her head is to the side, facing all of us. Now, in the particular room we're in, it's an observation room at the facility. Her actual doctor is watching this meeting from a mirror that's off to the side. So it's to the left of me, okay, and to the right of Sean and Margie, if that makes sense. So as far as he's concerned, things are going good so far. He has no idea that she answered some things incorrectly, and we don't need him to. What happens next, however, causes him concern, and he's pretty quick to enter the room. He doesn't see it all, though. When Margie was tight with Sean, her face was facing us, but it was also slightly down. And what we saw next was incredible. Margie had more tears now, but wasn't saying anything, and she started whimpering. The whimpering. We knew it all too well now. She squeezed onto Sean so hard as she could. During that squeeze, though, the situation switched. Margie closed her eyes tight and clenched her entire face, and for a small couple of seconds, we saw her face change. It was there, right in front of us. Sean couldn't see it, but we definitely did, Harley, Ryder, and I. We've seen the pictures, and looking into everything about that castle, that face was definitely that of the daughter, the castle couple's daughter. Now, the doctor behind the mirror, he wouldn't have seen her face in that moment. All he saw was what happened after that, which was Margie letting go of her hold on Sean, looking up at him. And when she did that, the face went away and she was back to being herself. She pulled her body from Sean's grip and she got up. She starts to walk backwards, opposite the mirror where the doctor is and away from all of us. And she starts spouting off things. Things like, "I don't need you. And you guys aren't helping either," meaning us. She then lets out this wailing snarl and growl all in one. You know, that loud sound people make when they're just fed up or extremely frustrated by something. She follows that up with an, "I'll get out. That's right. You'll see. I've been here long enough." Then she starts laughing, a crazy laugh at that, telling us that it's almost time. She gets more animated with her body movements, and that's when her doctor comes in. He's followed by two orderlies that are quick to remove a resistant Margie from the room. The doctor waves his hands in the air, calling us over to where he is by the door, telling us that he's sorry, that these outbursts have become more and more common, and they're looking at ways to get it under control. He talks about some new medications and other kinds of therapies and tells us that the other personality seems to be showing itself more and more. His first step is to calm everything down so that she can be workable, and then he'd like to work on the therapies that will keep her in control. And all of that sounds great. This all sounds believable and reasonable. But we know there's much more to all of this than any of that. Back at Sean's, we set up our workspace. We're going to take in what we got that day, combined with everything else, and we're not going to stop until we put this situation together. Sean starts pulling a few things from the fridge, putting some snacks together and some food, puts coffee on, things like that, and we get to work. The review of what went on that day and getting into the discussion of what it all could be was fascinating and overwhelming at the same time. We need to focus on the connection between this castle spirit and Margie. We know there is a spirit in that castle. Margie went to that castle and came out unwell. And from what we witnessed at the facility, it told us the daughter was definitely in play here. We go over some initial possible theories as to what has happened, and a couple stand out in the end. Does how Margie is mean the mother is at the castle and the daughter somehow attached to Margie while she was there and left? This could make sense. But there are a few things that bother us with this theory. If we are to stick to our belief that the spirit we're dealing with is the daughter, then this can't work. If the daughter left the castle, nothing should be there. We don't believe the mother's involved, and we didn't detect a second spirit at the castle. Working our first belief, the one we feel most strongly about, that the spirit at the castle has to be the daughter, this means she could not have attached to Margie and left with her. Okay, the second theory. Because Margie was already having mental challenges, was this spirit able to get in her head and mess with her while she visited the castle? And what we're seeing now are the after effects of that. Because Margie herself is not, and was not, 100% at the time of her visit. This could also make sense. But we have issues here as well. Margie was sick like this before she went for help. She got better, and then it all started up again and became more exaggerated after this castle visit. What caught her into the facility were her recurring symptoms. And this goes for both theories here. It's only after she got to the facility that things became severe. The outbursts, the changes of personalities, and the memory loss. I mean, Sean said that she would forget small things like where she put her coffee cup or where the book was that she was reading. But how she is at this point, she can't even remember who her friends are or where they are. Something more is wrong with Margie, and it's becoming more intense, otherwise she would be getting better. The major problem with both of these theories is that there is a third part to this, that request. The request came from Margie, but spirits often lie. However, if we were to stick to our guns on the fact that there was only one spirit that we're dealing with, then anything with the mother is out. But in sticking with the one spirit idea, then we can't see the daughter at the facility and also catch her at the castle in our readings. So you see the dilemma here. We went around and around about this. And we only work one idea at a time. We work it to its fullest until we can either prove it wrong or prove it right. That's how you stay organized. Otherwise, things get messy. We all have to agree and feel strongly before we move in any direction, you know, us as a team, and we are sticking with the idea that there's one spirit here because we really believe that. It takes us a while and into the night to come up with a final theory. We believe that what we are seeing is between Margie and the daughter only. We also believe that they are both in limbo. In limbo in this case, meaning neither of them are settled. Ryder had some great insight on this, but it was difficult for us to pinpoint it exactly. Either way, we have our most probable theory, no matter how crazy it sounds, and we need to move on it. Let's take a look at Margie's switching personalities. We do not believe that it's personalities that broke apart from the original Margie. We feel it's one that's been added to her from the outside. We are talking about the daughter. I mean, we went over a lot, you guys. You don't even know. But that's where we ended up. First of all, when we are vulnerable, we are susceptible to physical attack, an emotional attack, or manipulation, any harm really. We've seen this, people making bad decisions during downtimes, people that are desperate, you know, and picking the exact wrong person to date, going to the extremes, doing things they normally would not, like joining a cult. Vulnerable people are all around us. And who is very vulnerable in this so far? Margie. Although things were going well and things were going smoothly and running pretty much normally for both her and Sean, she wasn't out of the woods yet when she went to that castle. She was still in her therapy, and even though she was starting to come back, she was still considered fragile. She was on the right track, but that doesn't mean she wasn't still sad inside, still missing her children and fighting off the mourning of her old life. Margie was scared, scared of what the future would be with her and Sean. Her children were her life, so who was she now? That caused fear. We know women go through this. Some have a better go at it is all. For Margie, it was overwhelming. Our theory is that because Margie was still vulnerable when she was at that castle, the spirit dipped into her and played around a little bit. But because Margie was pulled from that place quickly, there was no time for the spirit to fully attach. There was enough time, though, for it to lock onto Margie. The spirit can still connect to her and play with her and be in her head. Because Margie was not 100%, she's still vulnerable. Her being off affected her as she started repeating some of her old behaviors, which only made everything worse. And by the time she got to the facility, the daughter had a very good hold on her. Not enough to take over, but very good hold. With Margie at the facility, pretty much on lockdown, very medicated in the beginning to calm her nerves and stresses, it was the optimum situation for the daughter to move in. No holds barred. So what does this mean? Like I said earlier, Ryder has a lot of experience working with the afterlife. If you listen to the Meet Ryder story that I have up, you'll hear more about who she is. But because she was heading down the medical examiner path, she was asked a lot of questions about the afterlife. You know, where people's loved ones were going now that they had passed. It became an area of interest for her. Ryder belongs to a pretty unique group that specializes in solving very strange phenomena around spirits that never get to where they're supposed to go in the afterlife. One of the ideas that they had been talking about, a theory I guess you could say since we're talking about theories today, is that there is a phenomenon out there that goes beyond typical possession, and they call it spiritual reclamation. Usually when someone reclaims something, they're trying to get something back that was theirs. In these cases, it's a very fuzzy line, and Ryder's never seen it in action before, but it's when a spirit is trying to get something that was theirs, a body, they had a body, they're going back to get one. The problem is the body they want was never theirs. Some spirits are extremely good at honing in on their powers and skills, just like all of us here on Earth. We have advantages over others and disadvantages compared to others. According to this group, and many paranormal groups actually, it's the same in the spirit world. And if you're a spirit and can find one of your talents, you can work on it. You can make it stronger. During a spiritual reclamation, the spirit is not only trying to attach to you, join you, they're trying to replace you, which is exactly what the request said, that if we didn't come soon, she would be replaced. And how is this even possible? How would they do this? Well, going with the idea that we are energy, energy can hold, push, and pull. Through a combination of push and pull energy, the spirit is actually switching parts of you in your world with parts of them in their world. During this reclamation, both are in a limbo of sorts. The spirit cannot be all that they are in their world, and the human person cannot be who they are in their world. Things start to get jumbled. Both of them start to come out at different times. And this is exactly what we have seen with Margie. If she sent that request, that would mean that she was of enough mind in the spirit world to reach out to us. This would take a lot of energy. Spirits have a way of getting around and getting into things, so she might have been finding some of her talents as well. That would explain how that request came in and that it was from Margie. You know, movies have portrayed things like this, radio signals, the TV's evil static, ceilings rotting. You know, movies are movies, but these things do happen. It also explains why she needs help and fast and wants out and not to be replaced. It explains why her behavior continues to get worse at the facility because more and more of the daughter is present. And once there is the full takeover, the daughter, the new Margie, will want out of that facility, and fast, and would most likely do anything to get it. She doesn't care who Margie used to be and doesn't want to just be in her body living in her life. She just doesn't want to be dead. She wants the body for herself so that she can truly live again. This is hard to swallow, I know, but we have seen, you know, in our line of work even stranger, and we accept this. Now, let's fast forward a bit. I've called in both Frankie and Jagger. Scarlett will stay back in case we need her for anything as a backup at the warehouse. I want someone on the ground at home, just in case something goes down here. The group at Sean's now, just to confirm, is me, Frankie, Jagger, Ryder, and Harley. We do our prep work, and then we work with the doctors at the facility to get Margie out of the hospital. And Harley was great on this, presenting her case to move Margie. She had papers signed by Sean, an entire care plan that she laid out so that doctors knew she would continue the care path he was looking to provide. In the end, Margie may end up back in their care to sort out the stray ends of all of this, but for now she's home. And this is a challenge because the daughter doesn't like change. Not while she's in the middle of her little project, but we get her there. She really has no choice. The fact that she doesn't try to get away from us tells us that she's not done with her transfer, which is good. She still needs the connection, so she can't really do anything about it. Frustrating for her, but very good for us. I check out my request from Margie, just to see, and there's still nothing more from her. I do write her back, though, one final time, telling her, we are coming for you, just in case she can get it. Outgoing would be harder for her at this point, since she would be getting weaker and weaker with the stress of this transfer. Okay, so our goal target and then push the daughter back to that castle, while at the same time pulling Margie back to where she belongs in her own body. Like she was at the facility, the daughter is very resistant to anything that we want to do. She's not even pretending to be Margie now. She knows what's up. Although we do see Margie pop through now and again, which is a great sign. She's still in there somewhere. We're forced to restrain the daughter, and we're prepared for that. We've moved the furniture. We have a large circle of sea salt that we poured on the floor. And on that, we have quartz crystal balls every 6 inches or so, both to hopefully help ward off any negative energy either coming from the daughter and being pushed out, or from other evil entities trying to take advantage of this fragile situation and bringing anything in. In the middle of that, we have a large, heavy board. And on it, attached to it, are padded wrist restraints. We don't want to hurt Margie, but we have no other choice here. We need her in one place, and really, we want her as vulnerable as we can get her. The daughter is flailing around, trying to fight off Frankie and Jagger, which of course she can't. You can see why they're helpful here. They get her down on the board, and they fit her with the restraints. I mean, this forces her to sit, but she can still move around. It will take all of us to get this done here, truly working as a team every second on this. Ryder, Harley, and I will focus on actions. Frankie and Jagger are going to focus on keeping the daughter at bay. If they have to do anything physically, and then also mentally, trying to focus on creating a barrier wall, if you will, really concentrating on anything that she throws out and counteracting it. We've all reviewed what to do, and they will be focused on trying to cut off the daughter's manipulation. And then we will be calling upon Margie. The daughter, she knows something is up. She will try to bring out certain emotions in us, actions, and force thoughts into our heads to distract us. To counteract this, we have to concentrate rejecting those thoughts and feelings by sending the complete opposite back to her. We all have to do this, but Frankie and Jagger are set up to be on the front lines before the rest of us are too affected. Frankie and Jagger take their positions on either side of the daughter. Harley, Ryder, and I are all in front of her. We're all inside the circle. We start out with Harley directly in front of the daughter. She tries to intimidate Harley by laughing, and then she spits on her. Harley just wipes herself and continues. She will be focused only on the daughter. Ryder and I are on either side of Harley, and we will focus on Margie. And Ryder will focus on the capture. Harley starts talking to the daughter, telling her that she's no longer welcome, that she has to leave. And she keeps at this loud enough to override the daughter's rants. Harley will keep this up as long as she has to, and as long as she can. I look over to Frankie and then Jagger. Both have their heads down, and I can see that they are concentrating big time. I also notice I'm starting to get a headache, but I don't have any crazy thoughts yet. So far, their barrier is working. And then I look over to Ryder, who nods. We are now ready to start our part. I start talking to Margie in the same way Harley is with the daughter. This will be my concentration. I need to connect to Margie. Ryder has a small gadget set up in front of her. It's our field meter magnet, or FM2, as we call it. It's another tool that we all have been working on with some of our tech connections. This goes beyond ghost hunters trying to get EVPs, and we are building this device to be used as more of an electronic form of spirit removal. And I'll explain that quick and in short and simple form, okay? Like how paranormal investigators try to get those EVPs, and they're using EMF readers, as do we, this device was built to not only find energy, but it allows us to hone in on one specific emission over the others. You know, something from one specific source that might be around. And once it's locked in, it basically uses different types of magnetic technology to pull all the targeted emissions that are flying around, or in this case, bouncing around inside Margie's body, together so it can grab onto the specific grouping from one source, here, the daughter, and then we can send her home. We're about 10 minutes in, and things are starting to get more difficult. The daughter is trying to stand up. She's moving all around. She's swinging her head from side to side violently. Ryder is working on the FM2. She has to keep updating the settings until she gets locked in. But I also see her continuously covering her ears. She's being affected. I too am being affected. My thoughts are getting blurry, and I'm talking louder and louder until I'm pretty much shouting over everything in general, but also over the random thoughts that are entering my head. I take a moment to check out Frankie and Jagger. They have clenched fists now, and they're sweating profusely. I can see the veins popping out of Frankie's neck. Harley's words are getting more shaky. I can see it's a strain for her to keep sitting up and in the daughter's face. This is tough, but we all need to keep going. As I'm shouting, Ryder calls out that she's found the target, but she almost can't even hold the device any longer. She keeps reaching for her ears and bending over. The daughter's laughing, but then we hear this flyby hum. And during that hum, I see almost an aura around the daughter. When that happens, there's no more laughing, and instead the daughter's letting out these intense cries and screams. This is it. We are close. Harley and I look at each other, and she nods. She agrees. The aura must be Margie. Ryder, though, she's now completely bent over, and she's covering her ears. She looks up for a moment, and I see her eyes are reddening and watering. I make the move and reach over and take the FM2 from her. She can no longer focus on that. You know, working out the settings was too much of a distraction for her to be able to keep the daughter away enough mentally to keep functioning. I keep talking to Margie, but now I have to keep the hold on the spirit energy until we get it all. What I'm waiting to see is the full lock. I'm basically pulling her in as close as I can get so I can package her up and get rid of her. We're going to basically slingshot the daughter back to where she came from. Frankie is now facing the ceiling, and I can see he's giving it all he's got. Same with Jagger. Ryder is slumped over in a ball, and I can hear her moaning. Harley is sinking more and more, and she's struggling to get words out. This lock has to happen soon. My headache is getting almost unbearable, and the random thoughts, they're now flashing through my head faster than ever. And then I see the green light. We have a lock on the daughter, and have a hold on all the emissions coming from her. It's time. I'm watching the daughter. She's extremely angry, shouting things, you know, lots of profanities, spit flying out of her mouth as she shouts over and over again. And as she flails around, though, I see that aura again. This time, though, it doesn't appear and then disappear. Instead, it stays there and it's trailing all of the daughter's movements, following her every move. It's Margie and it's time. I update the settings to reverse course on our package back to its source. And when I hit the button, I call out, send off. We see a large puff of a black smoke-like substance shoot out of Margie's body. It flies across the room in a straight line and hits Sean's shoulder, then continues on into the wall behind him that faces the backyard. And it leaves a good-sized black ring in the wall, as if someone burned it. During all of that, we hear this very eerie screech, and it doesn't stop. It just fades away, as we see the smoke do through the patio windows. We are all silent. I look around and I can see that Ryder, Frankie, and Jagger are showing signs of relief from the spirit influence, a good sign. I too notice some relief. My scattered thoughts are fading and my headache is lessening. It's piercing hold on me. As everyone starts to regain themselves, they're quiet. We're all looking at what we hope is now Margie. Sean starts inching his way toward his wife. We all back away a bit as he comes in and softly says her name. Margie collapsed after the shooting smoke, but is now starting to move. Using her hands, she pushes herself up, all her messed up hair in her face, and Sean leans down to her and
unhooks her.
She just grabs onto him. So it's over. Frankie lets himself just fall flat on the floor on his back. Ryder shakes her head a bit, and Jagger is getting up and waving his hands around like he's stretching out almost. Then he grabs a towel. He's wiping the sweat from his forehead. Harley and I had already gotten up. I go over to a chair and I sit down. I'm looking down at our MF2. I'm amazed at what just happened. If we had waited too long, or if that request never came in, never made it, the real Margie would have been lost forever. The daughter Margie would have left the family without explanation, leaving people hurt and confused. If she wasn't locked up somewhere for help, which would have been ironic since that's what happened to her in her own life. We all reflected on this as the situation came to an end. We stayed the night with Sean and Margie that first night, making sure all was well, and just to go over everything. They were extremely grateful. Margie described everything as floating in a very dark world, much like our own. It was dark, it was dreamlike, and she said it was almost as if she was underwater. They still might have issues to deal with as a couple and Margie herself, but this was over. We left the next morning and we all went back to our own lives. We presented what we knew about the castle to the owner of the castle. Had to close that part up, but we have no say over him. It's ultimately up to him if he wants to do any kind of spirit cleansing at that castle. Don't know if he has. There was so much going on in this unexpected job. The story could have easily been 3 hours long, let me tell you. And I know I say that a lot. You know, these jobs are pretty in-depth, but I try to summarize it for you guys without missing the point and getting some of the good stuff out so that you guys can tell what kind of job it was, where we were, and things like that. This job was one side, evil, looking to get more than they should have. It was wrong. And another side, a vulnerable woman in a well-lived life, now finding herself in a fight for her life. I hope you enjoyed the job and story today. Both parts, part one and two. Wrong things happen every day. All we can do is catch what we can and do what we can. As I like to say, stay involved and do what you can. Always explore. Expand your mind and keep dreaming. Thank you for listening, and until next time. And I will talk to you all soon.